Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Weed Day Wednesday, Tucson, Arizona's number one online radio podcast about all things medical cannabis. Your host, Bellstar,
and the Cannabis Kid. Our show features news, interviews, and all the latest information about anything and everything medical cannabis related in Tucson, Arizona, and the world at large.
We'd love to hear from you. Please give us a call, 646-915-8421. Email thctucson@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, visit us on MySpace, or tweet with us on Twitter.
Our sponsors for Weed Day Wednesday are Growers House, Accurate Med Testing, EZMarijuana.com, and Culture Magazine.
We would like to thank Tumbleweed Health Center and Studio C for hosting our show every week, along with the lowest price certifications in town. You'll find hemp products, accessories, and all things educational related to medical cannabis.
Visit Tumbleweed Health Center at 5315 East Broadway Boulevard or online at tumbleweedhealthcenter.com.
And remember,
be smart, be safe, and educate.
Welcome to Weed Day Wednesday.
Good morning, everybody. You're in for a special treat.
That's right. Stevie Nicks.
Live here at...
in studio.
Studio C.
Woo! We love Weed Day Wednesday. All right. Welcome, everybody, to Weed Day Wednesday.
Good
morning. Very, very special show.
Yes.
And I don't think my girl minds that I use the song to open our show with. You think?
No, you guys are best friends.
Oh, my gosh. A song for us anyway for our intro, but we have a very, very, very special little
like this.
Yeah, it's like the cannabis kid. There you go. There you go. Okay, we won't mess your stuff up. But guess what? So I was I've been friends with Stevie for 25 plus years. We've been hanging out.
Yeah, we grew up together.
Practically grew up together. I practically wrote her first song.
You guys were together for a long time.
We've been going to concerts together. We've been hanging out backstage together. We've been taking photos together.
Front row.
Look right there. You know, I sign a lot of stuff for her. I know she keeps it. But, Stevie.
Yeah, you were not breaking eye contact in that picture.
No. I'm sorry. Yeah. So Stevie's on the cover of Rolling Stone. What does this have to do with Weed Day Wednesday? Everything.
I was just going to say it, though.
Look, and I'm showing the camera here. And you guys can't see me, so I'm showing this beautiful picture of Stevie that you can't see. But check out Rolling Stone magazine. So Stevie, seriously, I'm her biggest fan. All right, we'll include Holly and Lincoln in this. We're her biggest fan. But Stevie has been through the years. She has tried every drug, every medication, everything that there has been through rock and roll that has provided her. Right?
Right.
She's been on that roller coaster ride. She's been through it, in it, all over it. And what she says is this. At 66 years old, getting ready to do another tour tonight, Father, she's all over the country touring with Fleetwood Mac right now. Oh, my God. Where is it? Oh, anyway. Okay, Nick says, when I'm writing, I will allow myself to smoke a little bit of pot. She says, it's my one little thing that I can do. If I'm sitting at the piano and I'm writing, then I'm not out driving around in a car. Nobody's here. Nobody sees me. And I'm not smoking with anybody. It's just me, and it's my choice. I use it as a tool, and I'm very careful, you know. And I get results. Of course she does. However, if I thought it was going to lead me back to something worse, I'd stop. Yay!
Nice.
That's awesome.
Well, and that's such an important thing to say, is there's a lot of people in the United States that are in high-powered jobs, are actresses, movie stars, rock stars, and that have been using it.
Huge influences.
That this plant would, you know, mean something to them, you know, not to the point that they would base their whole music on, but as a tool, like she says. I use it as a tool.
And it made me think of Dr. Lester Grinspoon and Carl Sagan, who used it as an enhancement tool, is what they said. So
What cannabis does is it
creativity.
Right. Well, it enhances the spirit, the mind, creativity.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're on this, if you are an artist of any sort, music, fine art,
very inspirational.
It's very inspirational.
Yep.
It opens up the mind in a different way that we wouldn't normally have on our earth.
Well, thank you, Stevie Nicks. Thank you for gracing our show. And we'll get her on here. We're going to get an excellent real live interview with Stevie. Just you wait.
So excited for that.
So excited. I bought the magazine and I had no idea. I was just, doing my thing, supporting my Stevie, and there it was. There it was. Confirmation of a lifetime.
Confirmation of a lifetime. I know.
There
that picture says it all right there.
It does. We'll
it
have
really
to
does.
Post that. Well, maybe. It's kind of a secret thing. So today on our show, Regina Nelson.
Yes, and her new book.
In. Yeah.
She's going to be talking about The Theorist at Large, One Woman's Journey into Medical Cannabis. And she's got a lot to say.
She sure does. Go to tumbleweedshealthcenter.com and check out, if you go there, you can... I'm going to actually have Cannabis Kid read her little bio for us right now.
Okay.
While we're trying to connect her on the line. So go to tumbleweedshealthcenter.com. You got news, information, certifications, and now
everything.
Regina. What we got?
Everything that you need to know about cannabis.
Yep. Scroll on down there.
So we got Regina Nelson.
There it's at large. She just wrote a new book.
Regina Nelson. Oh, sorry. Regina Nelson is a PhD student at Union Institute and University, concentrating on ethical and creative leadership studies at the interdisciplinary research within the medical cannabis movement. Her educational background consists of undergraduate and graduate level interdisciplinary degrees, a BA from Vermont College in 1998, and an MLS in leadership from the University of Oklahoma in 2002. In 2012, Ms. Nelson published her first peer-reviewed article framing
integral leadership within the medical cannabis community, and in 2014 published her first book, Theorist at Large. We just needed to say that. We need like a big echo. Jeez, One Woman's Ambiguous Journey into Medical Cannabis. She has also presented at peer-reviewed conferences hosted by the International Leadership Association and the International Cannabis Research Society. Ms. Nelson is a founding officer of Cannabis Patient Network Institute, CPN Institute, a patient-led driven membership organization desiring to build awareness of the endocannabinoid system and cannabis use as a medicine and champion community-based research projects as well as integral Education and Consulting LLC, a new and exciting educational organization launched in 2014.
Very nice.
Nice, very nice. All right. Okay, so it looks like we're going to do one of these fun things where we're going to call Regina.
I love when
right
we do this.
I know this is it's exciting.
I feel like we're catching them,
scary.
Like, what are you doing right now?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. What's going on? All right, and it's really fun because...
Are you drinking coffee?
Yes. Okay, here we go. And dialing. Oh, wait! They beat me to it. Regina, she's smart. Good morning. Welcome
good morning,
to Wednesday,
Regina.
Wednesday.
Good morning. It took me a minute to get you guys' number. Sorry, I'm running late.
No worries.
We were just telling the world about you. How are you? We're so excited to have you on our show. We wish you were here in our couch.
I wish I was there in your couch, too. I woke up to 6 inches of snow this morning.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So, yes, Arizona is sounding nice and warm, and I miss you guys. How are you?
We miss you, too.
Yeah, we miss you very much. You're going to have to do a little tour over here.
We might be doing that later this year, so fingers crossed.
Yeah, toes crossed, too. So what's going on? It looks like you've got everything going on right now. You've got a book. You've got a new organization. You're teaching some classes coming up soon. Am I right on that?
I am. I've got all that going on and a lot of other things. So, yeah, I'm juggling right now, but... Yeah, I'm excited that Theorist at Large finally is out, and that was kind of a big accomplishment for me in 2014, and I was really excited about it. So it's out on ebook form on Smashwords right now. Print editions are available on our website, but they will be up by mid-February on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble and all the great book lenders online.
Oh, that's fantastic. And where did you say they were? What companies hosting your book?
Well, currently right now the ebook is being hosted on Smashwords.
Smashwords.
And the print edition can be ordered off of our website, cpninstitute.org. And
okay.
Just look for the tab that says Theorist at Large Presale. And I still have a few of the first editions available, I think maybe about 8 or 9, but it should come up on, it will be up and available for purchase by, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble by the mid-February.
Oh, wonderful.
Very nice.
And we'll have to have a couple copies for the health center, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And, yeah, let me know, and I'll make sure I send you a signed one, too, Kim.
I was just kidding. You read my mind.
I know, you guys. I love you guys. I would love to be able to do that for you. You know, this just kind of came together out of a lot of the work I've done through my PhD program. I have been told a number of times, wow, you know, your final paper, it's really a good peer-reviewed, article. You need to send it to a peer-reviewed journal. And I went through that process. In fact, I've been through that process now twice, and have been published in peer-reviewed academic journals, which is awesome, but it's a lot of hoops to jump through. And so as I was sitting there, kind of contemplating all of this work that I had, it really made a lot of sense to put it together into a book. And to, what I did is I basically, each chapter is kind of a term of my PhD coursework, but it talks about my life and where I was at in my life on this journey at that time. You know, I started this in Texas, and then I moved to New Mexico, and that's when I met you guys. I met you when I came over to Arizona in 2012 for the Patients Out of Time conference, and it talks about that. And then it kind of moves forward. I took a leave of absence for a period of time from school because I just really had to take care of some health issues. And Mark and I were working away on CPN Institute and those kind of things. And I've actually just started back to school just this month. And I'm hoping I'll finish my last two terms. And by 2016, I'll be Dr. Nelson.
That's going to be fun.
What a journey.
So it is exciting.
Well,
and I finally,
Did we lose you?
I'm still here.
Okay. Sorry.
It's very exciting. And so I was happy to get that out, because now I'm really starting to work on my dissertation work, which is a couple of research studies. One, I'm looking further at why women become medical cannabis patients, and I think you and I have talked about this before, Kim, my interest around that specifically. And then I'm also looking at kind of the gap between patients and their physicians, and how a lack of what theoretically is called integral diversity maturity is really stopping physicians from really taking cannabis therapy seriously and thus learning more about the endocannabinoid system.
Mm-hmm.
And we have so much social stigma that is still attached to cannabis use. And the truth is, I think we could go to, if it were discovered today, the pharmaceutical companies would find this to be some great miracle because it works so synergistically with our bodies. But because millions of people are using it, it's still easily dismissed as just, because it's misunderstood. And so I'm hoping that, my dissertation studies will shed some light on that in the next couple of years.
So let me ask you a question about that, because there are still so many people in the world who are just simply not educated about this. And it's not, I know they're smart people. I know that. They have to be smart to look at the positions they hold, or unless they're inherited. But there's still so many people who are closed-minded and tell us what you would say to somebody who is so staunchly the opposite of cannabis and says, no way, we should only use chemicals and we should only trust our pharmacies. What would you say to that person to make them change their mind?
Well, I think we've missed the central argument of the medical cannabis movement in that we didn't lead the charge with the phrase, we all have an endocannabinoid system, therefore we can all benefit from this. It really crosses lines. When I was at school a few weeks ago, I was doing an introduction in a workshop that I was in, and it was full of about 30 people who were leadership scholars, five or six of whom are black ministers from all over the country, some from very conservative states like Georgia and Alabama. And, you know, I'm kind of the last person to go, and I've been on a leave of absence, so these people have been there a couple semesters, but they don't know me. And so I kind of went into that, you know, this is why I'm studying this. And the connection being, you know, if we all have an endocannabinoid system, we all have to look at this and really take a good societal look at it, not just from a healthcare perspective, but in knowing that there's a legitimate healthcare perspective here, we have to consider why we continue to choose to lock up our minorities and have the largest incarceration population in the world in the United States, because so much of it is connected to this particular topic. Because low-level, nonviolent drug offenses are almost always connected to cannabis. Not to harder drugs, not to alcohol. Those end up with violence or other stupid situations attached to them or crimes attached to them, whereas cannabis doesn't. And we have to look at this from a greater societal perspective in that this change we're making with cannabis being restored to our society slowly but surely through all these different public policies that we've got going on now, that changes every single system that touches a person's life. And if you don't want to get on board with it now, a lot of changes are going to be made before you get a chance to be on board with it. So you want to come in and understand this. And, you know, and I think, you know, in some senses, you know, we've seen even public policy made with, you know, some of those early compromises, and that's why we have some of the policies we do. Like up in Washington, I think is a good example. They used a bipartisan committee, primarily led by a mother who didn't want to, you know, who really wanted to focus on that we don't want our teens to use. We want this to be safe.
Yeah.
And therefore, the DUI policy and other things were attached to that particular bill. Is that what we want as a society? That's what Washington decided that they wanted. And so we have to be involved. But I really think where we bridge this, and it becomes really easy. And again, I sat down with these five black ministers shortly after this class, and every one of them did not have a far reach to this is God's plant. And miracles can happen with that, because when you take a couple minutes and you can show a video or you can describe the situation of a small child coming out of a seizure like a miracle, when you can talk about babies whose brain cancer is now in remission, when you can talk about how these things happen and with no harm to the human body from the treatment, which I think is really key, because chemo and radiation and even anti-epileptic drugs, they do a lot of damage to the body, long-term damage that can't be repaired, even if it's only used short time. And so when you can offer stories, patient stories that are just miracle after miracle. I tell patients all the time, I can't promise you your own miracle. I can't tell you this will cure you or this will solve all your symptomology. But what I can say is I guarantee you it will increase your quality of life. I don't know if that's 10%, 25%, or 100%, but I know it will help. You know, I'm just really blessed that we do see, you know, so many miracles. But we've also, you know, we've also grieved for a number of patients who it was too late. Cannabis therapy was too late for them as a life-saving measure. But the one thing that families say again and again and again is they were with me till the end. They were with me till the end. And you can't buy that. You know, that's precious to somebody. And to spend the last hours with their grandson or their son or daughter and not have them in a drug-induced coma, but talking to you.
That's the gift you can't trade for anything. I was with
no, you can't take that away from someone, you know. And yeah, if you can give that to someone by helping them, I think that, you know, you're incredibly blessed to be in that position. And when you see, you know, and more often than not, I see absolute miracles where people's lives are changed. They achieve remissions or they find that sweet spot where their child is 90-95% seizure-free and they begin to have a quality of life again. And you can't buy that either.
Nope, you certainly cannot. I myself have seen some, and I say crazy miracles because it's happened right in front of my eyes, where people have either taken hemp oil or smoked cannabis, and I've seen instantaneous results from patients with MS.
Oh, absolutely.
Parkinson's patients. I was just using hemp oil. This Parkinson's patient's seizures right in front
tremors,
of me.
Tremors, seizures,
reduced by 75%. Mm-hmm. It was unreal. You can't not...
No, this
is
the CBD tincture.
That was just the CBDs. But with the MS patient, she was just miserable within 2 seconds of smoking. I've never seen somebody relax so much and see such peace.
Oh, yeah. Smoking is really great for the muscle spasms associated with MS. I don't know if you guys saw. I saw an interesting article yesterday because GW Pharmaceuticals, Sativex, failed in trials to control cancer pain. And it was one of the trials they were putting it through. But Sativex was developed with the ideal of being a good medicine for MS and muscle spasticity specifically. But Sativex by GW Pharmaceuticals is an extract. It is a CBD and THC extract. I had the opportunity last summer when I was in Italy to try Sativex from a patient who's legally prescribed it in Europe, and one squirt in my mouth, because it's a spray, it tasted awful. It burned my throat for hours. I had the worst dreams that night. I woke up several times, like, anxious, and I don't wake up like that using cannabis normally. I don't get that kind of dysmorphic, paranoid, anxious type feeling, and I definitely had that. And so I continue to look at these things as that proof that extracts are not working as successfully as whole plant medicine, because we see that all the time with these children and seizure disorders, because so many groups have gone to using extracts, CBD extracts, and they're taking more and more of the THC out of it as part of it, and they're having limited, they've kind of reached that point of limited returns because of that. But the other thing is, you know, they keep seeing CBD, and we keep hearing about CBD. The Stanleys and Realm of Caring did a lot of media around the United States and kind of changed the cannabis conversation. And then we see a lot of really conservative public policy bills coming up. And what we're seeing is less and less children responding to CBD, especially as we begin to take more and more of the THC out of it.
Right.
And on the opposite side of the scale, those children that we see that use high or THC-rich strains, they tend to get better results and maintain them more consistently than those with CBD. And there are reasons for that, but I think the biggest reason is a question we can't answer yet. What are you deficient in? Are you deficient in THC, or it would be anandamide, your endogenous cannabinoid? Or are you deficient in 2-AG, which is your endocannabinoid that mimics CBD? Because if we could draw your blood and tell you that, we'd know which end of the spectrum to start you on. But unfortunately, I see so many of these kids with epilepsy starting over on that CBD side, and only, you know, Dr. Getty's did a great study here on kids using that. Only about 10% are even responding. You know, 10%, you know, we're getting to that 80% seizure control. Half of them are about in the middle, but about 20% don't respond to this kind of CBD treatment at all. But in almost every case that I run across, if they're not responding there, I say try THC, and then they respond excellently. They're on the other side of that the need. And the truth is, for most of these kids that are using a good one-to-one, like a Harlequin strain, that's a full plant extract, it's high CBD, it's CBD-rich, it's THC-rich, both, they're having the best results of all.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the more, and it's primarily.
Go ahead.
CBD, tating, if it's not something that you need, it can be a godsend if it is something you need for withdrawal symptoms and other things like that. CBD is really important. And as you're talking about seizure control, as soon as parents get seizure control, they're just begging to start weaning the AED medicines, you know, the anti-epileptics. And if they, you know, and some of them start very, very soon because of that, instead of giving their child kind of time to get used to that consistent dose before they start that wean. But during the weans, they see a ton of different type seizure activity. Because if you read the side effects on any of those pharmaceuticals, they are different types of seizures. They're worse types of seizures. They're more activity in seizures. All these things happen normally when you wean. But if you can add CBD at that particular time, it really helps with those withdrawal symptoms and getting at those particular things because it changes. And so while doctors have been saying from observational studies, parents aren't really seeing the seizure activity, you know, what they're saying is that parents are not getting the seizure control with their kids that they say they are. I don't believe that's true. I think what's happening is parents are getting the seizure control, but then they start the weaning way too soon, and that's what the doctors are observing them through that period. And it's all withdrawal symptoms from these other anti-epileptics at that point, or a great deal of it triggers them very easily.
Wow.
See, these are all things that most people don't even think about, you know. Most Americans will turn on the news, and if Sanjay Gupta says this is good for you, then they'll do it. Or if Oprah or Dr. Oz or whatever, and they don't stop to think about things like that. Like, you know, the weaning of the, you know, prescription medications can cause even worse, you know, symptoms than what they're already going through, and the medications themselves can.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, you look at this, too. I've got, and I'm going to give you a really good example. We have a little boy that we've worked with since summertime. He was just barely two when we started working with him, and he got seizure control really quickly on a THC strain pretty well. But as they began the wean, he was on Lamictal. Lamictal is a bipolar drug. Lamictal is off-label prescribed to children with irretractable seizures who are between the ages of 2 and 16. He began, at his physician's prescribing, an adult dose at 7 months of age and had been on that adult dose for over a year and a half.
Oh.
One of the biggest side effects of Lamictal, when you wean it, is seizures. My daughter, who suffers from bipolar at 18, had seizures for the first time in her life because they were weaning Lamictal from her because they didn't think it was working.
Oh,
so
gosh.
When you think about this, he's not the only child I know taking Lamictal that's that young that's being given an off-label pharmaceutical far below the age that it's even recommended and at adult doses. And so now I have a five-year-old in that same spot. He's been on Lamictal since he was 4 months old. So I, you know, warned his mom because the wean is going to be wicked.
Yeah.
You know?
Holy cow. Wow.
So the parents are taking the children off their prescription medications. Now, aren't the medical cannabis and the medications working together?
They will work together. The medical cannabis will not interfere with the anti-epileptic. However, what you got to keep in mind is these parents came to medical cannabis because the anti-epileptics weren't working. Their child didn't have seizure control. They weren't doing well. These are, you know, Lamictal, Keppra, Topamax. There are a number of drugs. Some do work pretty well for some children, but it's actually, I don't know. I had no idea how many different types of seizure disorders there are. I still don't think I've been exposed to them all. All I can sit here and think about as a mom and a grandma is, what have we done to our earth that this many babies have this many problems?
Right.
And I keep seeing, you know, and I look at cannabis as a huge solution here because we need to clean up the earth. We need to clean our air, our water, our soil, our food supply. All of these things are possible with restoring cannabis to our society as an agricultural crop.
Well, and us being sick is the cause of the whole thing, you know, the dirty water.
I absolutely,
our endocannabinoids, our results. The endocannabinoid system is just not able to, it's been laid dormant for so long in so many people.
And I think you're right. You know, I think they just come out with some research. I saw the lead-in paper back in December, and I needed to get in and dig for some more information, but there are researchers in Italy that are, and I think this is going to come from Vincenzo DiMarzo's group. I think this was a preliminary paper, and I think we'll see some more information out. But I think they're about to say that the endocannabinoid system is in fact our primary endocrine system, which means it balances our thyroid, our pituitary, our adrenals, our hormones, all of these things. And if that is indeed the case, we definitely have a lot to learn here about how phytocannabinoids interact with it as a supplement. Because as we look at public policy, discussion is being made, you know, all over about reclassification of cannabis, and will Obama do that? Well, if he reclassifies it and puts it in a Schedule 3 along with Marinol, this is taking it out of the hands of patients. It needs to be descheduled. It needs to be considered the same as St. John's wort, as a supplement and as a food.
Echinacea,
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, echinacea and those type things. I don't know if you guys are aware or not. My partner, Mark Patterson, you know him, but he wrote a bill for the state of Missouri, the Cannabis Restoration and Protection Act of 2016. It was filed in the state of Missouri in December, and last week they got initial notification from the Secretary of State's office that it's gotten initial approval. So they're waiting for one more approval, and petitioning should begin on it in March. And I want to encourage you and your listeners to go out and take a look at it because it's a real legalization bill. It's treating cannabis as a food and as an industrial agricultural crop. And so it's removing, you know, smells no longer enough for DUI. Again, with DUIs, we need to look at impairment. There's a lot of impairment in drivers that are on pharmaceuticals. We already know alcohol is a major impairment. But what we typically find is cannabis doesn't lead as much to impairment. Now, if you're an impaired driver, you really shouldn't be on the road. I don't care what you're using. And that needs to be enforced. But we need to be looking at impairment. It's not enough that you have a seat or, we see a pipe in your purse, get out of the car, we're going to take your blood, because I'm a walking DUI. I'm not impaired. I know when I'm impaired not to drive, but I walk around with way more than 5 actin nanograms in my system at all times. And, it releases all the Missouri prisoners who are doing nonviolent cannabis-related crime, and immediately, within 30 days of the bill being presented, Maine has also put forward an initiative, a citizens' initiative, that, again, treats cannabis like a food, like fruit. And I haven't read their initiative through in full, but we have talked with people in Oklahoma, Arkansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, California, Colorado, all states that have the ability to put forward a direct initiative. That's how we came to Amendment 64 in Colorado, was through a direct initiative. And yet, since that initiative's been passed, we've had a whole lot of restrictions come in. In fact, Amendment 64 and the restrictions that followed really significantly changed the medical market and limited patients in the medical market. And so based on that, you know, we need to, looking at the public policies that half of our country has adopted almost, they're not working real successfully, and primarily because they're built with prohibitionist thinking. You know, let's look at alcohol. We repealed alcohol prohibition, so let's, repeal cannabis prohibition. This is different. Cannabis is a public health issue in that, going back to, every human being has an endocannabinoid system, so therefore
right.
We have a right to use it, but we as leaders and as patients, you know, we have to push that information because it's not getting through to our leadership. They're not
right.
understanding how important this is to everybody and that it's beyond a human right. Humans exist in part and whole, and we can, you know, go back into history with plant geneticists. Human development followed the migration of the cannabis plant. And
yeah.
You know, you can look at fossils of cannabis seeds that predate human existence. So we're meant to be with this plant.
Absolutely.
Love that.
Absolutely. Let me ask you a question about that, because as somebody who's worked in natural health food stores for, 20-something years in my youth, we were always taught that the whole plant is usually the best thing to do, unless it's a thing where you need roots or something. But let me ask you this: as far as that goes, we talk to people about preventative medicine and daily supplements. What would you suggest people do with this plant to just get it in their system, keep it in their system on an everyday basis? Like, should they be juicing it raw? Should they put it in pill form like a vitamin? What's the best way?
You know, I think, I'm truly of the way. I left that 2012 Patients Out of Time conference where we met each other with the belief that as a country, we were all drinking cannabis juice like we would drink wheatgrass shots, that we would probably have half as much, we would cut health issues by 50%, and those that remained would be significantly less impactful. Just because of the fact we would be all taking in a ton. The thing with juicing is you get a ton of cannabinoids in a non-psychoactive manner, and they turn to the things you need in your system. And I would love to see us all doing that on a regular basis. And from a supply and demand, none of our public policies even begin to reach what we need for access to be able to have fresh plant available to us. So from that standpoint, what do I recommend? It really depends on the patient. You know, people that are overall fairly healthy, I would love to see them doing, 1 to 2 ounce shot of cannabis juice, just even 2 or 3 times a week, I think would make a huge difference proactively to their long-term health. But for people who are already sick, I think the thing is we've got to look at the juice still, and we need to look at cannabis oil, the concentrated essential oil from the plant.
Are you talking
and
like
that's where we see the most healing?
Is that
like
the Rick Simpson kind of oil you're talking about, like the full plant?
We often call it Rick Simpson oil. I would never follow any of his protocols. I think Rick Simpson, he didn't invent this, but he brought attention to it, and I admire him for his work that he's done in this. But I think we're looking at full extract oils. We typically make oil with food-grade alcohol, like Everclear, so that even if you have a very small residual, you're still in the food-grade area. And I think that's what's most important, because we also hear things like isopropyl alcohol, and that's not good for someone to digest.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when we're talking, oils, I think with new patients, you've got to start very small and very low, and you've got to work up to a dose, just like you do with pediatric patients.
Right.
And you find that sweet spot for you. There are rules of thumb around that. Actually, as we mentioned this, I will be putting out another book in 2015 called My ECS Therapy Journal. And basically what I'm doing is discussing just these things, how to dose, how to begin dosing, what to look for, kind of long term, most of the medical studies that are looking positively at cannabis use, and they're still looking in animal models, but they use kind of the rule of thumb of a milligram per kilo of weight. So 1 milligram for every 2.2 pounds. And that tends to be fairly right on for a long-term dose in that my little grandson, who is 3, weighs about 25 pounds, and he takes about 50 milligrams of cannabis oil, which is about 1 milligram per kilo of weight, but he does that 3 times a day. But it took him 8 months to get up to that 50 milligram a day. We weren't really sure where his sweet spot was going to be and how he was going to do. He was a premature baby, born at 26 weeks, and he had a partially paralyzed diaphragm, which led to a fully paralyzed right lung.
Yeah.
That led to a surgery that put a stent between his diaphragm and lung, and he had a hole repaired in his heart. He had hip dysplasia surgery repair. He's had other surgeries, but he spent more of the first 2 years of his life in the hospital than out because of pharmaceuticals. He developed Crohn's. He's pre-RA. He's pre-lupus. He's pre-cancerous. All of these things because of pharmaceuticals. So in over 9 months, it's been a very slow progression. Only in the last month have we not been on G-tube feedings. All of a sudden, he eats sufficiently to support his weight and gain weight. He's having normal bowel movements. He seems to finally be in remission from the Crohn's, which was the biggest immediate health issue stopping his development and causing him to fail to thrive. Wow. And, you know, so it takes that, you know, it just takes time. But if I turn around, they're grown men. If I give them a 50 milligram dose, I can lay them out. But my 3-year-old grandson, his nurses comment constantly, he doesn't even slow down. He never looks stoned. And they make comments such as, because they're amazed by how well he's doing as well. But, you know, it's important just to kind of keep those things in mind. And while we have some rules of thumb, everybody is different. Everybody's systems work differently.
Everybody needs more THC or CBD. It just depends on the body and what it needs. The endocannabinoid system has been laid dormant for so long. Some people, it's needed so much. Like these kids, like you said, some take so much, and you can lay one adult man out with one of the pills that he's taking.
Absolutely.
It's incredible. Absolutely.
Well, you know, it is, but again, it was a process. We didn't start him on that, you know, and yet I do know parents that have started their kids at that high a dose because they had a serious reason. They had a cancer diagnosis, stage 3 or 4. They're scared to death. They're doing conventional treatment, too. And yes, it does lay their kids out for a little bit, but in almost every case, sleeping like that for the first month of chemo treatment while you're being worked up on a cannabis oil dose and being just sleepy all the time also gives you a lot of time to begin to heal. And most of the parents that have taken that kind of immediate action with a stage 3 cancer have seen remission. Those with a stage 4, they've really comforted their child, and they've kept them a lot longer than they expected. And that's important to a parent.
Let me ask you this question. So you talk about, you know, for somebody who's just starting out, what about for a cancer patient who's in their end stages? What's the best way to administer this to give them quality of life as they're on their journey?
So I think you can continue to look at cannabis oil from a sublingual dosing. The first time I learned about suppositories was from a hospice nurse, and now we use them a lot with people with cancer, especially colon and prostate cancer, uterine cancer. They're using, suppositories for that too. But I'm just starting to use it with people with Crohn's and other things, and we're seeing them go into remission very quickly. But with a cancer dose at the end, you know, I think it depends on the person. If you're an adult, you can start with very small doses, you know, I say 25 to 50 milligrams, or like the difference of a BB to a grain of rice, you know, if you're talking in terms of, you know, cannabis community and cannabis oil. But with children, you've got to dilute that. You can't start, you know, I mean, you can start that high. You're not harming them, but you're going to knock them out. But what we do is we talk to people about diluting it, and this is the same with, you know, kids with seizure disorders. We take 1 gram of cannabis oil, whatever it is they're using, a CBD concentrate, a THC concentrate, combination, whatever it is, and we dilute that in 2 ounces of a good olive oil. Or, you know, something better, because they mix well together. And then you have a nice suspension. When you have a 1 ml syringe, those little thin, tiny syringes, 1 ml syringes, you know, hold 1 gram of cannabis oil. It's a nice, it's really nice that they equal out that way. And a gram of cannabis oil is 1,000 milligrams when put into a 1 ml syringe. 1 ml of cannabis oil, 1,000 milligrams. Once you've diluted it like that and then you pull that 1 ml syringe again, you've only got 15 milligrams. So you really cut the dose way down. So if you start at 0.25 ml, you're only giving like 3 milligrams of cannabis oil. You'll, with children, you notice a difference with that tiny little dose.
Yeah. Wow. That's
with
amazing.
Pets, we notice a difference with that tiny little dose. So I tell people, start small. Don't get scared. Start small. Be willing to work your way up. And, you know, a big part of, I think, people getting scared is that, you know, they do something dumb. Like, you know, I've seen a lot of people out here. There's a company that sells suckers, and they say they're CBD-rich suckers, and they are. But they're also THC-rich. And I've met more than one parent who came out here from another state, and in their first visit to a dispensary, the dispensary had no oil. They didn't know how to help them. And the last thing they saw was, hey, by the register, those are CBD suckers, and they buy one. And they take it home, and they give it to their child. They don't break it into little million little pieces and give them a little piece. They give them the whole thing, and about halfway through it, they're a little zombie. And they're calling me, and I'm saying, you know, you've given them too much. Wrap them in a blanket, feed them something, and then put them to bed, you know, and they're fine. They don't need to go to the ER. They're not in harm. You just, you've overdosed them, and overdosed in a sense that at least it's non-toxic. It's not going to kill them, because you can kill them with most of the pharmaceuticals that they're on. And that's parents' biggest fears is, especially these seizure parents, because they rescue dose with something that will kill their child, and they can only give it to them once. If it doesn't work, they're on their way to the ER. With cannabis oil, we started recommending rescuing with your cannabis oil, and we have about 9 parents that we're working closely with, and I've recommended this to many, many others, and so far I haven't heard of one that that's not working well for. By giving them a third of the daily dose, if they have seizure activity every 5 minutes until they come out, very few patients get to that second or third dose.
Wow.
And their kids are playing again in 15 or 20 minutes versus in a coma, you know, or knocked out, or in an ambulance on the way to the hospital.
Yep. Oh, so many of those.
Yeah. Well, scary. It's really scary when you see young kids in seizure.
Yeah.
I mean, it scares me as a parent.
Yeah.
You want to help so bad, and you just don't.
You do. Well, and you know, that's the thing. You see such a time. I've now had the blessing to witness 3 or 4 parents giving that initial dose of the first dose of cannabis oil they've ever given their child. And in each case, it was dramatically changing within 5 minutes. Their whole life began to change, and that their child came out of the seizure and started looking around. You know, the first one, I talked a little bit earlier about this little boy from Nebraska, Isaiah. His parents walked him into our home. His dad could hardly hold on to him. He was flailing so much, you know, in constant seizure. And we started a discussion with them, and I handed them their oil that they were taking with them, and the mom immediately gave a small dose to him. And it took about 3 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes. You see him kind of, his head starts slowing down. It's not flailing so bad. And then all of a sudden, he locked eyes with Mark. He was looking straight at Mark because he was sitting on his dad's lap. And he became very clear, and he looked at me like, where did you guys come from? And he turned, and he looked at his dad. And his dad basically just started to cry because he goes, he hasn't looked at me in almost 2 years, eye to eye. He never looks at me. And as he's telling me this, the mom starts to talk and starts to say, yes, since he had an encephalitis issue at 7 months and has had seizures, he hasn't made eye contact, looked at them, smiled, anything. He turns mm-hmm. and he hears his mom's voice and he looks at her and he smiles at her.
Oh.
And we all lost it. I mean, we just, little things. These are things that you think about. I've got a number of parents, they're 21, 22 years old. They've been with a child that's 2 to 3 years old that's never communicated with them, that's never okay. recognized them, that they care for 24 hours a day. They love and they keep alive, and yet they get no recognition for it. They don't get a smile. Now, months later, these kids are saying, Mama, and they're crawling, they're walking, they're trying to stand. They're getting to know their parents, and their parents, for the first time in their life, are getting to know their children. To me, that says enough.
Yeah.
You know, it just
isn't
says
that
enough.
Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing? Isn't, wow, that's incredible.
That is life-changing for people, and I hope that, you know, there are so many people, like you said, that are coming across this country from so many states, and the sad thing is, even some of the people in the dispensaries, they're kind of like, you know, fast food people. They just sell their pot and they move it on. And for that to happen with someone, little kid and a sucker, and for someone not to say, hey, you know, I'm sure the parents didn't go in and say, you know, this is for me.
Right.
Sure,
no, absolutely not. And
yeah.
The truth is, in the end, no real harm has been really done. They had an
right.
uncomfortable experience. Here's the thing that I recommend to everybody who is a new patient, especially those who are going through cancer treatment because you're trying to get large doses of cannabinoids really quickly. I suggest that they take a choline supplement. Choline is a natural supplement. You can buy it at most health food stores or Sprouts in the brain health section. What it does is it naturally increases your acetylcholine level. When you increase the acetylcholine level, it mitigates the euphoria. So you can take a lot more cannabinoids without getting high in all the same senses that THC gets you high. Now, you still get the sense of well-being. You still get calmness, but you don't get really stoned, and that's a positive thing for most people. The other thing is, more and more research is pointing to the fact that the combination of cannabis and choline is vital for people who have Alzheimer's and or have that genetic predisposition in their family. It's also vital for people with PTS. It has a hugely calming effect. I'm recommending it to more and more of my veterans and other PTS patients that we work with, and they're finding the combination is the key for them and getting out of those loops that they get into. And so I've been recommending that, and it's something that, you know, it's pretty benign. It's a healthy thing to do, and they can take one in the morning and one at night for kids. They're getting it in capsules, and they're just usually pushing it along with the cannabis oil through a G-tube in most cases, because most of these kids, whether they have cancer or whether they have seizure disorders, they're on a G-tube because they're not feeding themselves normally.
Right. Well, and that's your basis of healing. You have to have nutrition.
You do. You do. And you have to have, you know, the biggest thing I see with this, especially for kids who are in cancer treatment or adults too, is the neuroprotection that they get, you know, because they're no longer, the one thing that I hear from patients and from parents of minor patients who have been through cancer treatment, they've already been going through chemo and then they begin cannabis oil. All of a sudden, it's like they're dealing with a totally different person or child because they're no longer in that chemo fog. They are cognitive. They're developing. And that's one of the biggest things for these little kids that are diagnosed with cancer, say, under the age of 1 or, well, really under the age of 5, is when they go through that chemo treatment, it really stunts them from a developmental perspective. And if you can keep them moving forward during that, that's a real positive too.
That's amazing. It's just, I'm glad that so much awareness is being brought to everybody's attention, and I'm really happy that there's, you know, a lot more research happening, and more people are just even being open to this. I know different states have different rules and what you can do and what you can't. But I think, you know, eventually, soon enough, we'll all be able to use the plant as we want and need to. And it's people like you, Regina, that really push this movement forward in such a really beautiful way. The way you talk, the way you present, it makes people feel like that they can be open and relaxed with you. You know, some people get up there on their high horses and they're a little scary, but we appreciate your kindness.
Well, some of them can be. We work with so many people, and we've been through our own health issues, and so we can really relate to the experiences that, you know, people are going through and the battle they've had with pharma, trying to find something that works, and they failed, and they're still sick. And, you know, so now I hear most often from patients is, I wish I had known about this first. I wish I had known about this first. But I don't think any of us in advocacy really expected, you know, especially 5 years ago, that children would be helping lead the way to real legalization.
Right.
And if you'd have asked me even 3 years ago, would I be working with families and children primarily, I would have thought you were nuts. You know, I still was not at that point. I would have understood and been comfortable with that. But again, when you witness these miracles, like a child coming out of a seizure in front of you, how can you not do something and share that information with other people? That's life-changing to me. And I feel like if I don't share the information, I'm doing a disservice to my own grandchildren and the future generations with them, because they shouldn't have to fight this fight. By the time my grandchildren are, you know, have children of their own, I hope if they're sitting around the table with their children talking about me and why I did the work that I did, it's because they want their kids to shut up and eat their cannabis. You know? I want the future generations just to understand this as a food and a medicine and not have all of the stigma attached to it that we've grown up with, because it was wrongly taken out of our society in the 1930s. And here we are less than 100 years later trying to bring it back. And it's going to take a number of years to fight through all the stigma and all the ugly things that are attached to this. But over a period of time, over the next few decades, again, we're going to start slowly seeing it affects every system that touches our life: healthcare, economics, the prison complex, law enforcement, social services, on and on and on and on. Every system. You know, even, again, food quality, air quality, water quality, all of these things are touched by this. And so as advocates, we have a lot still to do.
Yes, we do. We really do. We all need to get out there and do our part. And we want to thank you so much for doing yours and then some, and Mark as well, and tell him hello. And
yeah, keep on doing.
Well, he's in Topeka this morning at the State House testifying for a Kansas medical bill, and he'll be in Missouri tomorrow night in Kansas City. I'm not sure the name of the bar and grill. I'll have to look it up, and I'll try to send it over to you guys. But he's speaking in Kansas City tomorrow night.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Well, how can people get a hold of you? And
Tell us all your sites and
blogs. Yeah. Well, they can definitely get a hold of us through the Cannabis Patient Network Institute website. It is cpninstitute.org. As well, they can reach out to me through my for-profit website as well, which is Integral Education and Consulting. And they can email through both sites. And, you know, feel free to reach out with questions or touch base with us. Again, my book's for sale on both sites.
Yes.
And as well as through Smashwords, the ebook.
Awesome. Well, Regina, we can't wait to see you and hang out, and again, say hello to Mark for us. And thank you so much for taking this time out of your day to spend it with us and share all your incredible information. We're going to have you on again, because we barely got started. I know that.
It always seems like it's that way with you guys. Our conversations go quickly, but I love talking with you guys. I really appreciate you reaching out to me and sharing your audience with me. And you know, I hope that, you know, I will see you soon. We're getting ready to kick off some VFW and Senior Center tours, and we're going to be going to several different states and doing things later this year and in early 2016. So hopefully we can get Arizona on the stops, and when we come in, out and see you, we would
Yay.
Love that.
Be great.
That would be awesome. Well, thank you so much. Have an awesome Wednesday, and we'll
awesome.
Have a happy soon.
And we'll see you soon.
All right. All right.
Take
thank you, guys. Have a good one, Waco. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Wow, we love Regina. Oh, man, she's just awesome. Thank you for listening to that. There's so many great points that she made that we could have a whole other show just talking about her wonderful points, but you should definitely check out tumbleweedshealthcenter.com. There's information about Regina, and we've got links on our Facebook page to her book and things that she's – we didn't even get to talk, like, about her LLC and the conference she's got coming up, and we will have to have that again. Maybe after the conference, I think, which is February 3rd, she's part of the – I'm not sure if it's the International Business Conference, but we will have to have her on for sure. There's a lot of great news that we're going to get to today. I don't know. I just want to say this really quickly. I don't know even if Cannabis Kid is aware of this, that in town there is – first of all, an Arizona lawmaker proposes legalizing marijuana this June. You guys should all read about that. But this is called Medication Home. The 420 Social Club provides medical marijuana patients a place to medicate and hang. And you can read about that. It's a social pot club. So you can check that out. And there's one more article. We'll read all this next week. But there's a federal judge weighing marijuana's classification, which we know. We just want to get it off that schedule together.
Mm-hmm.
So, as we end our show, we just want to say thank you so much to everybody who tuned in today. We had a lot of great listeners and some bloggers. We love our bloggers and our comments and stuff. Regina, thank you so much for coming
on
air.
And make sure,
always wonderful.
Always, if you want to re-listen to the show, it's always great to share with friends.
Oh,
if there was a part of the show that you missed,
TumbleweedHealthCenter.com. Click on the radio button, and you'll get right there. You'll get to all our past shows. There's hundreds of them. And in March, we have our 3-year anniversary coming up. So we say Wednesday, we're going to have some very special surprise guests and lots of fun things. It'll probably be a 2-hour show because we just like to get people on who like to talk. We're hoping Robert Platschman comes on.
Maybe even
3-hour
show.
Well, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. We love you all. We appreciate you. It's an honor to do this show. And come on down to 5315 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 103. We're in the back. We're in Tucson. Get certified. Show your love and support.
Come on down.
Get educated. And remember,
be smart.
Be safe.
And educate.
Have a great Wednesday, folks.